Welcome to Scribe Session. Here, Inquirer Bengals beat writers Joe Reedy and Paul Daner Jr. escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily, all with the sidecar of sarcasm you've come to expect. Let's go.
Let's get ready to rumble! Feel the fires into the rear!
He'll gun it deep downfield for A.J. Green. A.J.'s got it! Touchdown! Bengals! Dalton in the shotgun. Two receivers left, two to the right. Andy straight back to throw. Fires for Gresham in the end zone! Touchdown! Bengals!
Up the middle of the field, look out. Reedy's off to the races.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. We are coming to you from inside the offices of Paul Brown Stadium, where people are pretty happy after the Bengals pull off the 13-6 win over the New England Patriots. Joe, how are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you doing?
I mean, I'm doing great, but we have this, you know, a big win for the Bengals. We're back here. It doesn't feel right. We're gonna have to bring in our first special outside guest for this edition of Scribe Session. And when we do that, any guest needs to have their own intro music. So, Mick Jagger, please go ahead. Go-Go is here. Kevin Goheen, Fox Sports Ohio, here with Mick Jagger.
The birthday Jack. Boy.
It is his birthday, so your present, yes. Sadly for you, is joining us on the podcast.
You know, I think so many people should be so lucky as to be able to hang out with you two on their birthday.
This is really sad that your life has turned into this.
Oh, on a grand occasion like this.
But there is, plenty to talk about, and it was an interesting. These home games have all been very unique and interesting. I will start with you, Go-Go. What was the first thing that came through your mind as you saw torrential downpour just descend on Paul Brown Stadium? Leaving, were you wondering, as I was, maybe if my car inside of CRG was going to end up in the Ohio River at some point?
Honestly, my thought goes back to my house, because I really got to fix a couple drains. Yeah. You know what? I was much more worried about that. I was like, oh, so. What can I say? It's always about me.
It is about you. Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, it was funny in that game. We talked to people afterwards. It could not have been more perfectly timed than it was for the rain to show up. And, right when Tom Brady gets the ball attempting to drive down the field, as pretty much everybody said, they were just happy as heck when the rain started opening up. And I think my favorite quote, and you can't really do it justice unless you heard Domitas say it, because he said it only like he can say it, was, man, those raindrops were huge, man.
Definitely.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, how much did the rain, you think, really affect things, Joe?
Only time I've seen rains like that, while being in South Florida, I think I saw them daily, but it was, considering that it almost looked nighttime out there and in a fog and mist, when you're a passing team and you're down 6 or 7, that plays a big role, even though it didn't seem to affect Kevin Huber on that punt. That was as far as weather conditions and everything, that might have been the best punt I've ever seen.
Yeah, with the wind, too.
With the wind, and given the fact that at the end of the first half, he didn't exactly get off his best punt. And no. That gave them an opportunity. That gave New England the ball, gave them an opportunity to kick a field goal and tie things up. So, you know, you put all those circumstances in, and he really came up huge.
Yeah, you know what? The other day we were assuming that we were going to have all kinds of great rain songs here on the podcast, and I came up with maybe my favorite rain song, and it's maybe my only country song that I actually like. And I think it really applies to pretty much the way every Bengal felt. It's by Luke Bryan. The man complains, but where I come from, rain is a good thing. Rain makes corn, corn makes whiskey, whiskey makes my baby feel a little frisky. Back roads are bogging up, my buddies pile up in my truck. We hunt our honeys down. We take them into town, start washing all our worries down the drain. Rain is a good thing.
Ain't nothing like a kiss out there. Who knew you would like Luke Bryan?
I like Rain Makes Corn, Corn Makes Whiskey, Whiskey Makes My Baby Feel a Little Frisky. I mean, those are just lyrics to live by. But you know what? Rain makes the man happy, and I think everybody in the Bengals also associated with Luke Bryan on that one. But I guess, what does this mean? What does this win mean? Is this just another win, or is this more because you've now beaten Rodgers and Brady in the same season?
It means nothing unless you beat the Brian Hoyers and Thaddeus Lewis's of the world. And they didn't beat Brian Hoyer in week 4, so...
Sure didn't.
You know, you don't get a win and a half for beating Tom Brady. You don't get a win and a half for beating Aaron Rodgers. Much like you don't get a loss and a half for beating Brian Hoyer or what have you. A win is a win is a win. I hate talking like a coach in cliches.
I was going to say, when did we let the coaches in here?
But, I mean, you lose to Buffalo, you're 3-3, and you're even.
Right
now, it means you're 3-2 and still in a three-way tie in AFC North.
Right. One thing, it's this team, over the past few years, under Marvin, has been very good on the road. Mm-hmm. They've actually, quite frankly, played better on the road at times than they have at home under the big crowds, with a lot of pressure on them. You know, this time, you know, now can they go up to Buffalo? This is a game they should win. And they're the early touchdown favorite. They should go up there and win. But can they handle their business?
Can they handle Thad Lewis? Yeah. I guess the question is, so Thad Lewis, who started one game for the Browns last year, and was a former Duke Blue Devil who Bengal Vinnie Ray played with, and quickly regaled us with a story of how he torched NC State and outdueled Russell Wilson when he was there.
A lot of people out-torched NC State. Didn't you see out-torch NC State?
Not with Russell Wilson, though.
No, Russ was not. When Russ was there, it was the opposite. They went down to NC State, and Russ just threw all over them.
Yeah.
And they got beat. That was
– they came up the rope.
There was no rope holding. That was Butch's first year when nobody held the rope. that was a bad – but Lewis had 5 touchdowns with no picks and 459 yards in that game. He was 40 of 50. I mean, the dude can throw it. He's done it plenty of times in his career, but like Vinny was even telling us today, he could be a completely different quarterback now. I mean, that was a couple of years ago. It doesn't discount the fact that the Bills still have Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller and a pretty good defense and a good chance to – it's the NFL. I mean, they just beat the Ravens two weeks ago. It's not like they – you're right. The bottom line is wins over Brady and Rodgers don't mean anything if you can't go and win. I mean, you've got a winnable 3 games in front of you at this point. You've got Buffalo. You've got at Detroit. You get the Jets at home. The possibility to run off one of those winning streaks to put you to the top of this division is right there at your fingertips with 3 rather winnable games. Worse, you take 2 out of 3, and there you are. You're sitting at 5-3 at the midway point. I think you feel pretty good.
However, they have not won at Buffalo since
1985.
It's a long time.
It's a long time.
See,
some of us were still in high school then.
Some of us were five.
And like Gogo said, some of us were still in high school at the time.
Yes. Well, I mean, we don't want to divulge ages here on your birthday. I don't know. Are you at the point now where you're not discussing how old you are on your birthday?
No, what am I? I'm not going to, you know what, I'm not going to put my foot in my mouth like David Pollack. So no. let's just stop there. No, I am now 46.
46?
46, yes.
That's a good, so you remember the big 1985 Bengals win, I'm sure, in Buffalo.
Not necessarily. You know, like a lot of those guys, I don't remember necessarily all those games and plays, you know, of all those years. But I do remember the fact that they lost, I believe it was 10 in a row to the Bills until beating them 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And that game wasn't easy.
No. Well, it's not been a good history with the Bills. Although we, as a group making the trip up this week, are hoping to turn the tide and turn this into one of the best road weekends of the year. Some nice Saturday events are planned. I know I will be spending the night with my man Eddie Vedder and Pearl Jam, who are going to be there on Saturday night. In fact, just because we have to, because I'm going to a Pearl Jam concert, we have to play a little bit of Pearl Jam for you. A little interview, if you will. So easy to sing along with because you don't need to know a single word. You just kind of go up and down with what you think the notes are and just let it all blend together. But I'm gonna love it, and I will be humming all over the place on Saturday night. Now Joe, though, will not be with me at Pearl Jam because you have great plans of your own, which we also can intro with this music.
God's theme song.
God. In case you don't know, and probably most of you don't due to the lack of excitement over hockey in general in the United States of America, that is the Hockey Night in Canada theme song. What, can you even get the station that plays that in our lovely United States of America?
CBC, the center ice package you can get it, but I'm more interested to see if Don Cherry will be at the Air Canada Center to see what blazer he will be.
Ooh.
He will be donning for this game.
It's Leafs Oilers. Leafs Oilers is the tilt on Saturday night. So we'll both be doing that, and then we will reconvene for the game on Sunday.
What will you be doing Saturday night?
I'm lame compared to you guys.
You have nothing.
I have no distinct plans as of right now. You know, I always like to get to the Anchor Bar when possible in Buffalo, but we'll see how that goes.
As one of our cohorts would call it, the Anchor Bar.
The Anchor Bar.
That's right.
Well, maybe Gogo can be the one that chimes in with our King of the Road restaurant rankings, since the two of us will not be sharing a meal on Saturday night.
The Buffalo Chop House, very good. In fact, when we went 3 years ago for a preseason game, one of the better steakhouses, even though I will be dining at the Hot Stove Club at the Air Canada Center, where they have a...
What's the Hot Stove Club?
It's a restaurant. They have like three different sizes of prime ribs. They have the 17-ounce game day cut, and then the name-your-own cut.
Just however much
that's
you
dangerous.
Like.
Yes.
That sounds very dangerous.
You're not supposed to name your own, I don't think.
No, you're like, it's dangerous to name your own.
You're like Babe Ruth, Jason. Give me 24.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of us don't know our limits.
Yes.
Clearly. Well, so good luck. Hopefully we make it to the Bills game on Sunday, which will be a 1 o'clock tilt. That'll be on CBS. And Guns Hockey will be in the house as our lead referee. So you can look forward to the Schmedium referee shirt showing up this week.
Add a couple minutes of game time for
exactly.
Rules, announcements.
Plenty to explain.
Yes. But also, since it's the 25th anniversary of the Super Bowl 23 team, Solomon Wilcots will be the commentator, but also Buma will be there. Some of the NFL Today analysts branching out and going to different games. Shannon Sharp will be at Denver-Jacksonville, otherwise known as probably the biggest point spread game in NFL history.
Will Buma be on the sideline?
Buma will be in the booth.
Buma will be in the booth?
Ooh, yes.
How about that? With Solly?
Yes.
The three-man booth?
Yep, Harlan, Solly, and Boomer.
Well, that's a pretty good
the,
call.
The last time the Bengals won in Buffalo in 1985, your quarterback was...
Buma.
Norman Julius Esiason.
So this will be an interesting... I want to get into something, though, because the Bengals are going to need to, you know, score more points if they're going to beat the Bills than the... One touchdown in the last two games that we've seen, and it ended up being 21 drives, ended up being where the streak broke, with 21 drives without a touchdown.
Our long national nightmare.
Yes.
And I think this discussion, and that you can hear Joe and I get into this a little bit more, Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, the Moorline Lager House at Cincinnati.com Sports Beyond the Stripes with Paul Dougherty, presented by JosephAuto.com.
Excel. It's just rolling.
Excel. I mean, isn't it? I'm getting much better at it. But we are going to discuss this topic. How do you improve the Bengals' offense running more or passing more? This week, we saw the rededication to the run game show up where you had 162 yards on the ground. They were pounding it. Andy Dalton only throws 27 passes. And it was this physical knockdown, drag-out fight. Is that the answer to the offensive woes, or is it opening it up more?
You need to be balanced.
Right.
And I think we saw this three-game run of offense last year, Kansas City, then Oakland, and the Giants.
Yeah, the Giants, yep.
Red zone opened up. The other receivers opened up. AJ opened up a little bit. I think you need balance. Now, do you run it more than you pass it? Depends on the opponent. I think the Pittsburgh game, we saw that second half, it was balanced. I just think this team's identity is being physical. It's being balanced. You need a sense of balance. And that's kind of where you go at it. You got two running backs. You drafted Giovanni Bernard in the second round for this, and to catch the ball out of backfield and change of pace. Now, it got bottled up pretty good by the Patriots, except for a couple long runs. But that's patience with the run game and stick to it. Some of it's going to be 1 to 2 yard runs, but you're going to get those big carries like Bernard.
Look, they're in the passing game. Andy's first seven attempts went to non-wide receivers. Mm-hmm. Not A.J. Green, but his first attempt to Marvin Jones. Mm-hmm. And Mohamed Sanu weren't until after those first seven. I think that had a lot to do with patience. If the Patriots were going to take those guys away, go use Jermaine Gresham, use Tyler Eifert. That's why, you know, just the same as with Gio, that's why you drafted Eifert. Use those guys down. And I think that had to do with, again, it goes back to patience.
Yeah, we heard a couple of guys reference the 2009 team a little bit, both this week and after the game, for a number of different reasons. Some of them because it was that type of a game. It was the defense and run game dominated it, and my whole thought process in this is 2009 showed where the ceiling was for that team and the limit was for that style. You can have a great defense all you want, but if your offense is strictly rugged and non-explosive and focused on the running game, it has a ceiling. You can only go so far. And certainly, in this year, when the passing game is so prevalent. You're not gonna you know that you can't win a championship that way, in my opinion. This offense will be decided by whether Andy Dalton and these receivers can start being explosive, sure. Can find a way to get chunk yardage in the passing game and be effective and keep team and be able to score more points. And slowing it down and dragging it out is only going to take you back to that style that has proven in the past, I think, to have a ceiling on it. And I don't know that you can make a run. You have to come to terms with the fact that you're living or dying whether Andy Dalton can turn into a quarterback leading an explosive offense. And it's going to be on his right arm. So shouldn't they give him that chance to let that develop? Or are you thinking that it needs to be just a run-centric offense? I mean, I know you talk about balance, but at some point, Andy needs to be chucking it a little bit.
But in 2009, those first nine games, Carson averaged about 220 to 230 passing yards a game and was solid. Where that offense went down in 2009 was when Chris Henry got injured. Because It was much like the offense that we've seen the past 2 years. There wasn't that bona fide second or third receiver because T.J. Houshmandzadeh had left. Andre Caldwell, Lavernius Coles ran like a sundial. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the options that they do now. You've got more options. I think they can average 220 to 250 a game, an occasional 300 from Dalton. But as we've seen, you get Andy, once you get up to those high 30s and over 40 attempts with Dalton, unless your opponent is the Pittsburgh Steelers, you ain't going to win those games.
Yeah. Well, you may be right, but can this team legitimately make a Super Bowl run like they believe they can without him being more effective and being more explosive?
Oh, the explosive is hitting large chunk plays, hitting those 28 yarders on 3rd and 15 from your 2-yard line, which is that was a fabulous throw he made. As bad of a throw as and decisions he made on the interception in the red zone at the end of the first quarter.
Dreadful.
That throw to Marvin Jones was on the money. Marvin Jones made a great catch, got them out of a hole, and really springboarded the touchdown drive. Those are the kind of plays I think you're talking about, and they have to be present. They've got other players who are more capable of doing that. Again, go back to Eifert, in particular down the middle. And can they do enough to free up AJ every so often?
Yeah. That's the question. And kind of this topic is something that we broached to Jay Gruden after the game. Talked a little bit about that. This is a small little bit sort of talking about the run game and physicality and a number of things. Here's a little bit of Jay Gruden.
Overall, how did you feel your run game did?
We won, so I'm happy with both of them. But, I'm never going to be satisfied. I think I'm glad we ran it. Still wish we'd get more bigger plays from it.
I've got to 12 13s because I know you were looking for a couple.
Yeah, we got a couple of them. I'll look at the film. I'm just overall, we scored 13 points. We had some opportunities we didn't take advantage of, unfortunately. But the big thing is we got the win. But I think I'm going to be hard to satisfy. You know what I mean? I think the talent that we have on offense, we got to do a lot better.
It seemed like after that Andy interception in the red zone, you were heated, he was heated. Was that just frustration over the turnover in the red zone?
Actually, no. We were talking about, we weren't even yelling at each other. We were, Giovanni was uncovered, and I was telling him to hurry up and snap the ball.
Okay.
And he said, I was trying to snap it, but the lineman wasn't ready. And that was all it was, because there was a couple times we lined up and no backs, and they didn't get set out there. Part of the reason why we came back to the third and long one, to hurry up and get out there, because they weren't getting set. And that's all. I was telling them, get these guys going. You know what I mean? He said, I'm trying. I said, what's your job?
So it wasn't a little heated. So it wasn't
No. It was heated last week when he overthrew a couple guys. But yeah. It wasn't heated this week. I'll let you know when it's heated. You'll know when it's heated. That wasn't heated.
But another couple Ripley-type plays, but you guys were able to overcome it.
Yeah. You're right. And that's, for us to be a great offense, we have to avoid the unbelievable, the fumbles, the interceptions across your body, and a blown assignment on a block or whatever it was. And unbelievable. There's some of them on there on tape that we'll scratch our head at, but that's why we coach, man. We'll coach them up. We got a young team, and we're still working. But obviously, we're happy with who we have on this offensive team, and we'll get better.
You know, I mean, with that, it comes back to what we were talking about you know, being physical. You can hear it in his voice, though. He will go to that more often when he feels like it can be more explosive. And you saw it. You talk about the Marvin Jones catch. Right after that, Giovanni Bernard breaks a 28-yard run. When that starts happening more consistently, I think you'd see Jay more open to going to it more. And I think that's really the question. I mean, it is, can the run game be that good and break some longer runs where you don't have to worry, you know, as much about
that? I think
we saw
that the second half of last season, breaking long runs and stuff.
Yeah.
But as we've seen with this run game, and this is now 4 years on now, that this run game is a process early in the season. It mm-hmm. really is. It struggles, but you got to be committed to it. Right. And with the exception of the second half of the Pittsburgh game until the New England game, Jay Gruden and this offensive staff was not committed to the run game.
I don't think that they wanted to be.
Right. They didn't want to be, and now you couldn't be in the New England game. Especially yeah. in the second half. You couldn't be committed to the run game. Mm-hmm. Cleveland, you should have been committed more to the run game, especially when it was 10-6 in the fourth quarter, and you had a chance to grind it out and do some possession and give your quarterback some confidence by stringing a couple first downs together. They didn't do that.
Yeah. But, I mean, that was a Cleveland defense that has been pretty stout against the run all year. But you're right. Maybe they needed to...
Average yards per carry and against Cleveland, though, were better than what Cleveland was giving up.
Yeah.
And they're going to face a stout defense this week, too, in Buffalo.
Yeah.
They've got a good front seven. So they're going. It's going to be a challenge there.
Yeah, it is. But this team is winning because of their defense, which brings me something that I want to talk about. And you'll also hear more about Cincinnati.com Sports Beyond the Stripes. Paul Dougherty, presented by JosephHile.com, is talking about Mike Zimmer, who is just the man of the moment. The media, everybody's media darling right now, and really should be. It's kind of about time that people realize what he's been doing for many years. And I think the question that we sort of raised was about the window of Mike Zimmer as a head coach. And is it closing for a guy who is in his late 50s, has been a great coordinator for a number of years, but never been able to break through? There's a lot of talk of how he should be a head coach by now. Why isn't he? The Bengals have been the beneficiary of it, without doubt. I mean, he's been holding down this defense for a while and has a bunch of guys that love playing for him on his team. But if it doesn't happen this year, do you start to wonder when it will?
I think you've wondered now for a year or two. And mm-hmm. I mean, last year, only one defensive guy, I think, got hired, which was Gus Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
And would Zimmer fit in Jacksonville with the new owner and stuff? And the GM?
Would you have wanted to?
Yeah, that's probably not. Now, considering what's going on in Dallas, would Zim be a good fit to go back to Dallas? Maybe.
Yeah.
Considering the automatic cluster bombs going off in Tampa Bay. Does Zim get a victorious interview down in Tampa if they part ways with Greg Schiano?
Wouldn't that be something, all things considered, that he interviewed for that position when they ended up going with Schiano? And, boy, they're feeling great about that decision at this point, aren't they? I mean,
rah-rah.
Yeah. The king of mediocre Rutgers football, shockingly, is not surviving in Tampa. Unbelievable.
Not a big fan of Greg Schiano, are you?
He was terrible at Rutgers. He's fine. I've heard he's an incredible micromanager who used to actually demand that they change the temperature inside of his room every day to be exactly at some ridiculous temperature. That's the type of micromanager that he was, just obsessive compulsive OCD.
Sahara or Meat Locker?
I think it was Meat Locker. Yeah. But
this media room here.
Yeah, we're aware.
Are we on Greg Schiano temperature?
I think we are. But it's one of those things where it was a weird hire in the beginning, and especially, you know, when you had a guy like Zimmer, if you were looking for a disciplinarian, but someone who actually has, you know, some skins on the wall in the NFL, it would have made a better fit. But that's neither here nor there. It could be interesting. He might get another run at that position. Who knows? But, you know, I just do begin to wonder what is going on that after all that he's done, he hasn't been able to get a job. But maybe the Hard Knocks thing, now Brady, Rodgers, whatever the Bengals do the rest of this season, that would be enough to get him over the hump.
What we know is that head coaches have to be more than coaches now.
Right.
You've got to be able to deal with the heathens like us, mm-hmm. you know, on a day-in, day-out basis, which he Mike does generally pretty well. But yeah. There's also times where he doesn't necessarily have a filter.
Right.
And who knows if that maybe rubs owners the wrong way.
Yeah.
If they don't know. But the fact is, guys love playing for him. He respects his players, demands the most out of them. And there's a mutual respect there.
Yeah.
You look at how he's done things with bringing in Terrence Newman, Tahani Jones, players, you know, that a lot of guys.
Wallace Gilberry.
Wallace Gilberry.
Adam Jones.
Adam Jones, yes.
Really, he's got a whole defense full of those guys.
He does. I mean, guys who, yeah, they had talent to begin with, but maybe others thought they were done for. And he's gotten the most out of them and gotten them to play highly productive. Terrence Newman's had a fabulous season so far.
Yeah, he has. He's been great, and he was great. That was the centerpiece of their game plan against New England was, listen, mm-hmm. these receivers can't beat our corners one-on-one, so let's just leave them on the island out there. Then let them cover, and everything else will be dedicated
always,
to ruining Tom Brady's day.
That's the centerpiece of his defenses. Yep. It was when he first got here. He had Leon Hall and Jonathan Joseph, mm-hmm. and that started everything. From there, if you can have guys who can hold up on the outside on their own, you can start dealing with everything on the defensive line and defensive front seven.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to get this. After the game, Marvin Lewis gives a game ball to Mike Zimmer, something he rarely ever does. That's not to Zimmer, but to any coaches or non-player or anything like that. So here's a little bit briefly with Zimmer talking with some reporters on Monday about sort of the game ball experience and a few other things. So here's Mike Zimmer.
When you got home last night, does the game ball just go in a box in the corner?
Actually, it's still down in the coach's locker room. I didn't even tell you that.
That surprised you? Give the game ball?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
I don't know.
It really didn't have nothing to do with me.
Maybe Parcells or Campo when you were DC ever do that right after a game?
I asked
Newman if he ever remembered, and he said he didn't. But he said Bill did that a lot after games, is give out game balls. And,
yeah, after the games in the locker room. I think I did, but I don't know. I don't remember.
Does it mean more that Marvin doesn't do that a lot? You've gotten two of them now?
Not to me, really. I mean, you know, it's a football. I mean, the players did all the stuff, and, you know, I'm just proud that they... You know, every week, it's going to sound stupid, but every week I got this little prayer that I say, you know, let me make the right calls, the correct adjustments, let the players play let the players play smart with great effort and great unity. And as long as they do that, then I'm good.
Do you say that to yourself?
About 100 times, yeah. I got to memorize. There's more to it, but that's all right.
When you do that, when do you do that?
Before I go out.
In the coach's locker room or something? Do you say it out loud?
Hmm.
You get it from somewhere else, or did you write it up?
Yeah, I wrote it.
How long have you been doing it?
Two or three years.
What got you going on that, too?
Because I'm a nervous son of a bitch. Helps calm me.
Huh?
Helps calm me a little bit.
Yeah.
you had some great defensive games in 09 here. The Flacco one, I think, week 9 among them. Had some great defensive efforts in Dallas. Where does Sundays rank?
It's up there pretty good. You know, we beat Peyton Manning when he was 10-0 in Dallas. I think that was a good day. You know, but any time, I think, you know, you go back and look at the Patriots game when we opened up, when was it, 3 years ago or something, or 4 years ago?
2010.
You know, they pounded us pretty good. And so, you know, anytime you can beat an undefeated team, I think that's, you know, it's a good thing.
Home without an offensive TD for the first time since 09, and you end a 52-game touchdown streak.
Not bad.
With rolling three corners against it, basically rolling three corners against Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady.
Yeah, we were just trying to get a win. We weren't really trying to, you know, we were just trying to get a win. Honestly, I mean, I knew about the quarterback record, obviously, or the passing record or whatever it was. But, I mean, we never talked about it all week. I know I didn't to the players. So, you know, because chances are pretty good he's going to get one.
Right. But also, as much as I gave you crap about it last year, now 5 straight wins against Super Bowl winning quarterbacks.
It's all right. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know any of that stuff. I just...
Just Coach Moore?
Yeah, this week we got to play Buffalo. That's all I know. You get to like it, enjoy it for about... Matter of fact, I didn't even... I mean, I went home, had dinner with Adam and Marky, and then... watched a little bit of the game, waited till my iPad got the game on and watched it. So, I mean, you know, it wasn't, I mean, you know, we, you know, just like the players know when they play good for the most part, and, you know, and you call a good game, or that was a good one.
I mean, under a pantheon of special wins, though, you take down Tom Brady.
Yeah.
I mean, did it feel good as did it feel as good as when you took down Manning in 06 when he was 10-0?
I mean, you know, it felt just as good as we beat Pittsburgh or we beat
Rodgers.
Yeah. Rodgers, I mean, you know, all three of them felt pretty good.
I thought it was interesting talking about the little prayer he says about his team and just basically go out there and play hard, and he's fine with that. I thought that was kind of a cool moment, a cool little divulge from Zim.
Well, I think, and today with the podcast going up Tuesday, today does mark the 4-year mark of Vicky Zimmer passing away.
Mm-hmm.
Where I still think one of the most revealing interviews I've had with Zim was a month after Vicky passed away, and just talking about the process and how wins at that time hadn't meant the same. And I think we've seen Zim open up a lot more this year, talking about Adam being here and
yeah.
One of his daughters, Marky, being moving up here, and Corey, when she finishes school, eventually moving up here, and all of that dynamic and everything that I think we've seen a little more human side of Zim.
Definitely.
And I still think the one thing too, when we talk about top 5 marks from Hard Knocks or residuals. That 5-minute perfect Pac-Man talking about what Zim means to them and as a mentor. Hell, don't bring the resume in. Just bring that video clip in and go, here.
Yeah, I think one of the problems that he had against him was that GMs, owners, wouldn't have viewed Mike Zimmer as a splash hire, as one that would invigorate the fan base in the past. I feel like... with the amount of publicity he's starting to get now, with things like the Hard Knock thing, he's much more of a name now. And maybe we see it differently inside the I-275 belt, but I feel like he is much more of a national name now and is getting more recognition now than he was before. And really the only way to put that truly over the top would be a playoff run.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, he hasn't changed really as a person.
No, not at all.
His style has not changed. He's always been very real. And again, maybe that's scares some people because it's not a splash name.
Yeah.
So
neither was neither was Mike Tomlin, neither was Mike McCarthy, neither was Sean Payton. Neither, you know, it's not.
Payton was a bit of a splash hire.
Yeah, he was a little bit more. But again, you're going to probably have that with offensive guys. Right. Offensive guys are tend to be more splash.
Really, but there's Marvin plenty of great hires that come out of nowhere, though.
Sure, absolutely. Right. Marvin was a splash hire when he was hired here in 2003 because he had made his name with the Ravens. He had, you know, his defense is obviously it excelled. It's such a high level. And the other thing is, with the Bengals at that time, they really, really needed to, you know, go outside the building for a hire. And they couldn't have, quite frankly, at that time, they couldn't have gotten a better guy.
And I think when Zim interviewed in Cleveland this past offseason, if he would have been hired by the Browns, and I know my dad would have been doing cartwheels, that would have been a splash hire in Cleveland. They know what Zim means. Hardworking, Midwest type guy, fiery, takes no crap, defense, and just that intensity. That hire there would have resounded. We're like, too, Rob Chudzinski's hire in Cleveland because he was a Toledo guy, grew up as a Browns fan and everywhere. That resonated a little more, too. But I also think under the dynamic in Cleveland with the GM and Joe Banner and everything, Zim's very authentic, too, where it's got to take a right relationship with a GM and personnel guy, where that's the one thing with Zim is if he gets a head coaching opportunity and stuff, I don't want it to be like when Romeo Crennel got the Cleveland job because he figures it's his last best shot, and he lost a little bit along the way too, but that was also because of age with Romeo and everything. Yeah. I don't want to see Zim being 63 or 64 and finally getting a shot and basically sacrificing who he is.
Yeah, exactly. And he's, you know, he's made it very clear for a long time that he wants that head coaching gig, but at the same time, he's always followed that with, I'm very happy in Cincinnati. So I think jumping to something that isn't the right fit just because it is a head coaching gig, I think, I would agree, I think that would be a bit of maybe a mistake. But it's easy for me to say. I mean, sure.
But we all like that opportunity to find out, hey.
Exactly.
It has to work on both sides. And as Joe said, I think the big thing is your relationship with the owner, the GM, are they committed to succeeding? Mm-hmm. Face it, not everybody seems to be that way. Right. Or is their manner of going about it and succeeding the same as the way Mike Zimmer envisions it?
Yeah.
Because I think Tampa Bay, there's a lot of questions right now. Are you really succeeded to being a winning football program?
Yeah.
And you look at, I mean, people talk about the blackouts in Cincinnati and stuff.
They have the same problem there.
Oh, yeah. It's worse there.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've done it to the point too where all they've got to do is the 85% tickets sold, and they couldn't do that a lot last year. So that's the thing. It's got to be the right fit for everyone. I thought 2 years ago when he interviewed in Miami, that would have been a good fit because he knows Jeff Ireland and everything. But, you know, right now with Joe Philbin and Kevin Coyle, that looks like a decent hire at the time here too. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, like I said, who knows what happens in Dallas? And I think
Would that be good when you have the overbearing Jerry Jones? I know they have a good relationship, but
he knows it. That's the thing. He knows it. He thinks he can work. Jerry's still kicking himself over letting him go in 06, and that's a hire that I think, without Jerry going after the name, that's a name still in Dallas that resonates and everything.
Yeah, we'll see. But for now, and for the rest of the season, he's still the Bengals defensive coordinator, and that's the biggest reason this team has a chance to make a Super Bowl run.
Yeah, and I think you've got a bunch of people throwing things, kind of like Go-Go threw his pen during the game on Sunday.
You know what?
We've all had
our moments, and hopefully I don't start breaking down like my computer did with 2 minutes left to go in the game yesterday. Hopefully I don't start breaking down that way.
For a scribe, there is nothing worse than losing what you've already written as a game ends in front of you. It happened to Gogo. I nearly was a victim of a shrapnel of a pen being thrown. And I think a high F-bomb per second ratio.
Quite frankly, I think Mike Zimmer would have been proud of
it. Mike Zimmer, you're right. It was your Mike Zimmer moment, and it was spectacular.
But I think people are throwing stuff right now going, why do you want to see Zim leave? We don't want to see Zim leave. We want to see Zim get an opportunity and be promoted and get what his goal has been all along. We are in the business where we want to see people succeed and do well.
Yeah.
And if Mike Zimmer advances to the next level, it speaks well to this team.
Right.
That assistants are getting those opportunities.
And that's why you hear it in Marvin's voice when he talks about it. He wants Zim to get the head coaching job as much as anybody anywhere and believes in him, and he would have the second it would happen, he would be, you know, giving a standing ovation to him on the way out the door.
He went through it himself.
Yeah,
you think he sees
some of himself in Zim in a lot of ways. That struggle and understands that struggle a little bit, maybe.
Maybe because you know what, he went through a few head coaching interviews as well, and that's when he eventually left Baltimore and spent the year in Washington. In part was because of that. It was. You know, it was time to move on from there. He needed to move on and got a shot. And basically, honestly, if you remember that one year in Washington, it was under Steve Spurrier. Oh. Marvin basically was the head coach.
Head
coach defense.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, with Zimmer going, I mean, the bottom line is going to Buffalo here and the Buffalo-Detroit Jets run. It's got to happen. No more futzing around and going back to 3-3 would be just a huge disaster for all that you have accomplished. You've got to take advantage of this early season run and really start to make a move in this division if you want to win it, because you know there could be a lot of teams hanging around the wild card if you end up putting yourself in that position where you could be fighting off a lot of people.
Yeah, if you go back to how you opened up the podcast, you said the Bengals coming off a win, the win against New England. It wasn't an upset. It wasn't unexpected, per se. You know, it was one of those games. Hey, can we beat this team? They're an elite team. They're an elite franchise. Can we? But it wasn't an upset. It was time for us to grow up as a team. And I think, you know, if this had been a couple of years ago, you call that an upset. Oh, the Bengals upset the 4-0. Well, yesterday they beat them.
Yeah.
And they're starting to prove themselves. And I think that's kind of where this team is. But along those lines, you can't go out and these next three games, those are three games they should win.
Gotta have it.
Yeah. Gotta have it. No doubt. But well, I'm pretty interested. Go, we appreciate you for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate it.
Happy birthday, even though you're about to go collect, aren't you?
Always. Always. That is always the mindset.
Yes, I mean Joe is going to buy you dinner.
Yes, that was at the casino. It is because that's a little pay up from my BG Falcons, mine and Nick Herm's BG Falcons, beating the Kent State Golden Flash.
Of course,
earlier.
you being a proud alumni of BG and Joe being a
Maction.
Being a proud Kent State product.
Of course, me paying. There's only one way to describe my feelings on it. Can we cue the Marvin laugh track?
Oh, the Marvin laugh track. You're right. This from today's press conference, which Marvin turned into, somehow he turned into a teenage girl who got a giggle fit in the middle of it. So I think it properly describes everything. You can judge for yourself.
You've been some high-name quarterbacks this year. Roethlisberger, Rodgers, now Brady. Is there any value in that?
Well, you're just on that angle today, huh?
I need a good soundbite, is what I need.
Well, I don't try to get a soundbite. Wow. It's like the guy when he told me the camera in my office, if I opened up that door, he couldn't see me. He shouldn't have told me that the first day.
Ha ha ha!
You said it, not me.
Well, can we try?
I think it's...
Joe, can we get your impression of that?
No, not really. No.
Let's face it, when the question came up, can I just get a soundbite?
And that's really the only proper reaction.
It really is.
That you could expect.
You know what? Let's face it. We're all going to use that from now on, because he actually came back and gave her a decent soundbite.
He did eventually give a good soundbite. Unfortunately, yes, only, I cut that off because I just wanted to laugh.
But only after a member of the media said, you're not going to get one.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think
he challenged
all,
him.
Yes. and you won a challenge, I believe, which is... Hey, Marvin's 2 for 2 this year. We should shelve all challenge jokes. But yeah, no, that's the Marvin laugh track, which was the highlight of today, far and away. But so we're on the way out. You know what? In honor of Go-Go joining us, I think we were going to Go-Go with the Rolling Stones. I say we go to Go-Go on the way out. So Mick Jagger returns for us. We thank Go-Go for joining us. Obviously, you can read him at Fox Sports Ohio. Make sure you check him out. Twitter at FSOhio
underscore
Kago, the dreaded underscore. But yeah, make sure you read him and follow him there. Of course, at Joe Reedy, at Paul Danger Jr., Cincinnati.com. We're there every day. Beyond the Stripes with Paul Dougherty, presented by JoeSpago.com, every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at the Moreline Lager House. Thank you for listening. We're here every Tuesday with the podcast as well. So please come back and listen again. Have a good one.
Love.